You're listening to the Whole Hog Sports Podcast. And now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
On today's show, Matt Brown from the Extra Points Newsletter will talk to us about all of the big stories going on in college sports right now that are off the field. Also, Christina Long will join me in studio to talk Razorback football and basketball. First, a word from Kendall King.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design, with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
We're joined now by Matt Brown of the Extra Points Newsletter. He does a great job. If you haven't subscribed to his newsletter, I would encourage you to do so. As detailed as anyone about the business of college sports. And I want to talk to you today, Matt, about a lot of things. Obviously buyouts with what's going on here at Arkansas, and we'll get to that. But first, kind of the news of the day is the Big Ten is really on the cusp of something potentially revolutionary, and we don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that has not happened in college athletics, and that's this $2.4 billion capital investment deal with a California pension fund. I want to get your thoughts on this and maybe give people who don't pay attention to the Big Ten, but here in Arkansas, they're fans of college sports, they're fans of the SEC. Why is this a big deal that everyone needs to be paying attention to?
Sure. So everybody in college athletics, whether you're in the Big Ten, the SEC, the Southland, the Sun Belt, everyone in Division I is very concerned right now about growing revenues. And it's not just because of everybody trying to figure out how they can pay their athletes and opt in to the fullest extent possible for the house settlement, but a lot of other things are becoming more expensive, like facility construction and labor, and public schools throughout the country are both struggling with enrolling enough college students, thanks to demographic change, and declining state funding. So everybody is looking for extra nickels and dimes in the couch cushions. But there's often only so many tickets you could sell. Mm-hmm. There's only so many times you could sell your television rights, and that's typically spoken for several years in advance. And so really a lot of conferences have taken meetings about potential private capital investment, not just the Big Ten, certainly the Big 12, the American Athletic Conference, and off the top of my head, I can name probably a half dozen individual schools that have kicked the tires on this. I believe where we are with the Big Ten, and it's not a sure thing that this actually goes through. We could talk about why. This is probably the closest any league has been to potentially accepting these terms. And what that would mean, if it happens, is that every single school in the Big Ten would get a very significant immediate cash infusion. But it will also mean that they're going to be giving up a share of future revenue until the 2040s and potentially beyond.
Ross Dellinger, who does a great job covering business of sports too. He had a story this morning on Yahoo, and he interviewed some board members from Southern Cal and Michigan, and there was a great quote in there. It said, why lock yourself into a 20-year grant of rights when the world is changing every 3 minutes? This is really one of those things, and we can talk about this with coaching buyouts too, that it feels like the programs or the conferences just the industries right now that are the most flexible to get in and out of these agreements, those are the ones that feel like they're thriving more than others.
You know, it does speak to something that I think is really important and challenging about not just private equity in college athletics, but to your point about coaching buyouts and a lot of decision-making. Media rights agreements are typically relatively long-term. Mm-hmm. You generally are signing a TV contract for 6 or 7 years. A lot of the structural contracts that athletic departments engage in, whether that's with apparel partnerships, multimedia rights deals, ticketing vendors, a lot of these kind of strategic partnerships, they're generally longer term deals. And a lot of the strategic kind of innovation or investment opportunities able to conferences are. Mm-hmm. But the people in higher education and college sports that make these decisions are generally not long term employees. University presidents at R1, Research 1 public schools, they change jobs every 4 to 5 years. Athletic directors are increasingly changing jobs every 4, 5, 6, 7 years. head football coaches, we both know, and this market definitely knows, are hired to be fired. Mm-hmm. And it's unusual for someone to be there for good or bad longer than 5 or 6 years. So there's this unease with many regents and people both at the university side and kind of on the industry side in general in college sports about the wisdom of entering into any of these kind of gigantic relationships when the people who make the decision will not be the people held accountable if things don't work out. This happens a little bit in corporate America with publicly traded companies as well, but I think it is especially challenging in college sports.
Go back to the private equity. Greg Sankey, it seemed like he's pretty opposed to this for the SEC. Do you think it changes the SEC's position at all if the Big Ten does agree to this?
Probably. It will depend a lot on the specifics. And I have to admit, I find Greg Sankey's argument pretty persuasive when he's repeatedly said that our institutions have other mechanisms that are less risky and less expensive if they need to raise money. Mm-hmm. If you're a public school, whether that's Arkansas or Texas A&M or Ole Miss, and you need money for, say, a capital investment, you could sell a bond. You can borrow money leveraging off of the credit rating of your sponsoring institution. You can petition for a state appropriation. You can go borrow directly from a bank. You don't have to give up equity or control necessarily for these kinds of arrangements. And I can understand why Arkansas State or ECU might be willing to enter into a more risky endeavor because that might give them capital that they couldn't get otherwise. But if you're a state flagship school, you don't need this. For whatever reason, several Big Ten institutions, and I'm pretty sure I know the circumstances behind a handful, are looking into this. But if there's a world where suddenly the top 9 schools in the Big Ten have an extra $100 million, even if Sankey's right, I imagine there's going to be different conversations the next time the SEC meets about keeping up with the Joneses, because that is one of the most dominant forces, good or bad, that drive all of business in college athletics. What are my peers doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it feels like that's kind of the battle right now, right? I mean, it's the Big Ten and the SEC trying to one-up one another.
It is, and the question, and I've written about this in Extra Points, but I think the question I would ask any of those school leaders that I would encourage fans and local reporters to ask too is to be very specific about what you need the money for or what you want the money for. If you're on Penn State, for example, I can actually understand why you might be more aggressive about trying to raise some of this capital, because Beaver Stadium, their football field, is falling apart. And it doesn't have the amenities or some of the updates necessary to drive as much revenue as it could. If you want to borrow money so you could build more luxury boxes or build a better MMR apparatus on your campus, something that's gonna generate more revenue in 6 or 7 years, I understand that. That's why you and I might go to the bank and borrow money if we're going to make investments into our business. But I think the idea of we need to get more money so we can pay our players more money and chase some on-3 headlines, I think that's extremely dangerous. Just like I think it would be if you and I decided to go to the bank and borrow and get a loan and have future debt obligations and just use that to pay our existing workforce. That's not a sign of strong financial health, and the bill will come due for that. I have some concerns that maybe some university presidents and ADs and leaders aren't really thinking this through enough and are motivated more by fear of being left behind than really what you want to do with that money and how you're going to compensate for the strings that come with it.
Okay, so speaking of fear, coaching buyouts, it seems like these programs, they are scared to death of losing a coach who has one good season. We've seen this here at Arkansas with Sam Pittman this year. He has one good year. They handcuff themselves to him, and now they're paying a big buyout price to let him go. Penn State, we saw this with James Franklin over the weekend. We mentioned yesterday that we didn't know if there was a mitigation. Front Office Sports had a story this morning that said he is bound to mitigate the buyout, but it's $49 million. We saw A&M do this with Jimbo Fisher a couple 3 years ago, $76 million. Like at some point, are we going? Are the leaders of these programs, are they going to wake up and realize that these 10-year agreements with giant buyouts are maybe counterproductive, or are they just at the mercy of what the agents want to do?
I think it's much more the latter, and it's not just the agents. I think something that maybe you fellas understand, but maybe not every listener does, is that the dirty little secret, especially in the SEC and the Big Ten, is that the athletic director does not actually hire the football coach. The athletic director may be who is publicly accountable if the football coach doesn't work out. The AD may be involved in those negotiations. The AD may have a lot of input, and then sometimes they get to hire. But generally, this is a decision that's made by the president. It's made by boosters. It's made by sometimes political authorities like regents and more than one case, a governor, and by the people who are writing checks. And your job as the AD is to put on the blazer and put on a brave face at the press conference, even if you weren't responsible. And so the challenge then becomes, if you're an AD and you're sitting at the negotiating table and you look at a contract and say, this is ridiculous. Why would we ever want to handcuff ourselves to a $65 million buyout? Well, if you don't get this deal done and it's somebody that the money people at your school want to hire, it doesn't matter how financially responsible you've been because you're going to get fired. And there's another complicating factor is not always, but many times, the AD is using the same agent or the same search firm as the coach she's negotiating with. Mm-hmm. And there can be a little bit of I scratch your back, you scratch mine, or I don't want to alienate Jimmy Sexton, or I don't want to alienate this gigantic firm because I might need them three or four other times down the road. So you and I can look at this. You don't need to be a financial master of the universe to say that these buyouts don't make any sense, especially given how difficult it is for anyone with the best of circumstances to predict who's going to be a head football coach or not. But they're just responding to the incentives, and the incentives are to continue this craziness.
Arkansas is in the market, obviously. There are going to be a lot of teams in the market. There's already a lot of teams in the market, and I figured this is going to be a really wild coaching carousel but before this is all done. Does this have the potential to be a hard market reset in one way or the other?
It has the potential, but I've been doing this full time since 2012, and I feel like I've had three or four off seasons where on paper it made a lot of sense to say, is this where we're going to have a reset? Are we going to have a reset around COVID? We're going to have a reset around NIL, around the House settlement. Mm-hmm. And so far, that hasn't happened because there's always been somebody who's been willing to put up the money. Over a long enough time period, yeah, I think there will probably be some adjustments, and the folks that I think are most likely to see their income go down in the short term are not head coaches so much as position coaches, strength coaches, as kind of the anonymous staffers that make $165,000 a year. But I would not hold my breath for anybody getting only short-term deals or limited buyouts or anything that more closely resembles a contract in the NFL.
You had a newsletter back in September where you had the fiscal year budgets of the top 20 college football programs, and these are public programs. Like a Notre Dame isn't listed in this, and you would expect that Notre Dame would be paying a market value toward the top here. But you had Arkansas at $57 million, or roughly $57 million that they had paid in fiscal 24. Alabama was number one at $113 million. A&M was two at $90 million. A lot of teams, obviously, in between. I think Arkansas ranked number 19. Is this a good apples-to-apples comparison? Is there any good apples-to-apples comparison between what teams are paying for their football programs? Because as we know, or at least I know in talking to people around the program, you know, how Arkansas calculates some things might be different than Alabama, might be different than LSU. Is there a good way to determine what these programs are spending and, you know, maybe how far behind Arkansas is from other teams?
It's a very good question. And one thing I would quickly want to make clear is that when I'm talking about operating budgets that I publish on Extra Points or in that story, we are not talking about player payrolls. Mm-hmm. That data does not measure or track any NIL money, any house settlement money, any contribution to a roster. That money tracks, it comes from an annual itemized budget that every school in the NCAA has to file. And it tracks spending on stuff like travel, on food, on administrative salaries, coaches, but also things like facility debt or severance packages and some things that aren't necessarily cash. It's not a perfect apples to apples comparison. It is probably the closest thing we have to an apples to apples comparison because there's so few standardized data sets across even just the SEC, mm-hmm. to say nothing of all of college athletics. But there's a lot of nuance in those things, and I just off the top of my head, I remember one of the very highest programs in football operating budgets from fiscal year 24 was Washington, and you might think that sounds a little bit strange, but part of that was they went to the championship game, so they had to play game expenses for three other games that other schools didn't have. And they counted like $20 million of the budget towards like facility debt and renovations. And different schools might calculate that differently. I don't think it's crazy to suggest that Arkansas is on the lower end of the SEC in a lot of operational staffing expenses. I don't necessarily think that that means that they can't be competitive in football, but they're not going to have the resources, both financially or manpower, that Alabama or Texas or Florida probably will year in and year out. And that's been the case, I think, since the early 90s.
There's another big story going on here, kind of under the surface with the coaching search going on. But Arkansas is trying to find naming rights for its football stadium at Reynolds Razorback Stadium. They have contracted Learfield in a third-party agreement to go out and shop the naming rights for them. As you look at how this has worked at other schools, I'm sure you've seen this. What are the benefits, do you think, going with a third party? And what's the benefit for that third party? Like, how is it worth it to them?
Sure. Well, I think a useful thing to think about here is, even though there's a lot of people that work for Arkansas Athletics, who are doing general fundraising, who are selling tickets, who are building relationships with various community groups, selling the stadium naming rights package is a pretty unique animal. I would consider it like the difference between being a regular real estate agent and a real estate agent for NBA players on their third contracts, right? Like selling a $20 million mansion is a little bit different than selling me a bungalow here on the northwest side of Chicago. So because there's a limited number of companies and entities that can realistically afford to pay for stadium naming rights, and because those are going to be really complicated agreements, that's not a term sheet that's three paragraphs legally. Mm-hmm. It may make sense to say, we're going to work with a specialist. Learfield is one of the two gigantic multimedia rights companies in college sports. They facilitated naming rights, field sponsorship deals across the country for big and small schools. And they might have a little bit more expertise in not only identifying potential candidates, but in moving that process through. And then, of course, Learfield gets a piece of that action, right? Whether that's a chunk of the rights of the naming deal, whether that counts against any other multimedia rights agreement or revenue share that they might have with Arkansas or anybody else. So the question just like if when you're selling a house, could you do it yourself? You could. Will that take a lot of time and potentially a lot of resources that you might not have? Maybe. And you might decide, maybe I'd like a little bit less money if I can work with a partner who can get it done faster or can get me into doors that I might not be able to open otherwise. Selling stadium naming rights is not as easy as a lot of schools have thought it would be, because that's not something you can sell for 50 grand. And in the great state of Arkansas, or among Arkansas alums or fans, there really aren't that many companies that can afford and would benefit from spending that kind of money to get naming rights. There's some, obviously, we know of a few of the very big ones, but there's a reason these things tend to go to insurance companies, financial services companies, and healthcare firms.
And it does sound complicated. You're talking $4 to $5 million a year. And I thought it was kind of telling when I asked Hunter Yurchek about it a month or so ago. He said that not only will it not happen this year, it may not happen next year, that these are really complicated deals to get ironed out, that it might be 2027 before we see a new name on the stadium here in Fayetteville. I want to get you out of here on this, and I'm putting you on the spot, Matt, because I didn't tell you we were going to talk about this. Have you paid attention to John Calipari's booster insurance?
You know, I have. Honest to God, I don't know why this is being a big deal, because this is not a novel idea. Hmm. This is what Players Health does, and they're better capitalized, and that's the insurance company that Woj is involved with. And there's a few other kind of bespoke agencies that are willing to cover some of this. I think it's bigger news because ESPN wrote about it, and Cal is connected to a lot of writers in the basketball world. But this is a financial vehicle that does exist elsewhere.
Good to know. All right, Matt, you do a great job. I could sit here and geek out and talk to you about this stuff all day, but we do have to wrap it up. Appreciate you being here.
Of course. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Matt Brown of the Extra Point Newsletters. When we come back, Christina Long will join me here in studio. First, a word from Kendall King.
The Kendall King Group family of companies plays to win, just like our hogs. We know how demanding retail marketing is today. From digital omnichannel creative services, through in-store signing and displays, and finally to social influence, we've got you covered. Our KKG Inc. family of companies, Kindle King, Shopcart Creative, and Soapbox Influence are winning with multiple retailers and brands. We play to win and will be a winning partner for all your retail marketing service needs. Go Hogs!
Welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. Christina Long is in studio now. Matt Brown, by the way, just he is as educated and intelligent, I think, on the like the business of college sports as anybody I know.
Yeah, I really like Matt. He's been helpful to me just in some stories I worked on this summer. The stadium naming rights story I did, the story about some of the layoffs Arkansas did. He was really helpful. He's just very accessible to people like us that just kind of want some help understanding or want to share some understanding with our audience. I love Matt. He's great. And I love his newsletter.
And it's amazing. Like, you can get into, like some of the legacy media outlets, and this isn't talking bad about any of them. He's as good as any of them, and he's grown this newsletter. And again, like I said earlier, I would encourage you to sign up for the Extra Points newsletter. It's something that we read daily that hopefully makes us a little bit smarter.
A little bit.
Just a tad. I want to get into efficiency ratings today. These update every week. Again, if this is your first time hearing about efficiency ratings, this is basically let me step up on my soapbox for a minute. I hate total offense. I hate total defense. I hate points per game, offense and
defense.
Don't even
start about yards of any kind.
Well, I mean, that's total offense, total defense. Yeah, no, I mean, like, okay, you know, you got 500 yards. Well, you lost the game by 30. Like, who cares? it's all about scoring points and possessions. Those are the two big things that make up our efficiency ratings. And each week at our website at wholehogsports.com, I update this based on the games the week before. It changed a little bit over the weekend. Now Vanderbilt didn't play last week, and I've been saying for a couple of weeks now, Vanderbilt, they are going to fall in the efficiency ratings. But right now, there's three games to evaluate them by, because I don't care about what they did against FCS teams. I don't care what they did against most of the group of six teams. What I care about is what they do against the SEC, other Power Four conferences, Notre Dame, and then select group of six teams. So, like, Arkansas played Memphis. Memphis looks like they might be a playoff candidate this year. They are a playoff candidate. Now, I don't necessarily think Memphis is better than most of the teams in the SEC, but hey, they beat Arkansas, and so they're a team that's capable of playing with power conference teams, so they would be included. South Florida is included, playing Florida, things like that. I didn't think I was going to put Washington State, Ole Miss in this, but I think after watching the game the other day, you have to include that in the efficiency rating. So Vanderbilt's still number one offensively. They are scoring at, and again, I've said this before, but if it's your first time, think about these numbers like batting averages. They're scoring at about a 489 clip, you know, about 49% of all the points possible to Vanderbilt this year. That's what they've scored. And that's propped up. They didn't do great against Alabama, but it is propped up by what they did against Virginia Tech when they scored 44 and South Carolina when they scored 31. And their defense was really good in both of those games, too. The rest of the top five in offense right now, Ole Miss is number two, Tennessee's number three, Georgia's number four, Missouri's number five, and I'll go ahead and say Alabama's number six because Alabama's just right underneath Missouri. Then there's, as far as you know, the percentages, it falls off a good bit between Alabama and Arkansas at number seven. By the way, A&M, who comes to Fayetteville this week, they're eighth in offensive efficiency, right there behind Arkansas. OU, their defense fell a little bit because of what happened in the Texas game the other day. So LSU is now number one in defense. A&M is number two. I tell you, I've been really impressed with A&M defensively. And this is the thing going into this game. It's how does Arkansas move the ball against Texas A&M? I'm not saying I don't think Arkansas can. I'm just saying, are they able to move the ball against A&M better than Florida or Auburn or Mississippi State? Those are the three conference games that A&M's played. Notre Dame moved the ball up and down the field against Texas A&M, which really makes them being number two in the SEC in defensive efficiency all that more impressive because they gave up 40 points in like 10 or 11 possessions against Notre Dame. That was not a good defensive performance for them, but they've been so good the last few weeks. In SEC play, they've had 37 possessions, and they've given up 36 points. I don't know that I've ever seen that, where you have a team that has got that has given up more or fewer points than they've had defensive possessions. And during that stretch, Christina, teams are 2-for-34 against A&M on third down.
They have been surprising to me. I mean, I didn't think they were going to be bad this year. I thought they were going to be kind of upper middle. And here they are, you know, at the top of the conference about halfway through the season. And I think, to your point about Arkansas being able to move the ball, I would expect them to be able to move the ball better than Auburn and Florida, because I just think their offense is better than Auburn's and Florida's. I'll tell you what, I've been doing some research for next week on Auburn, and it is difficult to find things that Auburn is good at, especially offensively. So I think I would expect Arkansas to be able to do something. Now, I don't think they're going to do what Notre Dame was able to do, because I don't think they can do much that Notre Dame can do. But I would expect them to have a little bit more success than some of these recent teams, especially just because of, you know, their offensive efficiency is higher than those other SEC teams that Texas A&M has played. But at the same time, I don't think that this is going to be simple. I think A&M is going to win. That's, you know, spoilers for our coverage throughout the week. But I just think that the matchup there is more interesting than maybe some that we've had recently.
The potential equalizer on Saturday, and I know your hair is excited about this, is the rain that's in the forecast.
Yeah, it's going to be something.
Like we're talking about, what, like a 60% chance of rain?
Yeah, I think that's
on
what
Saturday.
Said, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean it's going to rain the whole game, but you know, you think about Arkansas and the problems that they've had holding on to the ball, that is certainly, I would think, I look at that and I think, wow, that's not the greatest forecast that you can have if you're a Razorback fan. But on the flip side, you know, I mean, if you're A&M, you got to play in it too. You got to hold on to the ball too. And so it could, I feel like it could sway things one way or the other.
Yeah. Yeah. Depending on the conditions. Yeah. It could be the kind of thing where you kind of have to throw out some of these stats and metrics. When you get to a certain level of rain game, you kind of almost can't, you know, it'd be funny if it was really sloppy this weekend in terms of rain and it was just like impossible for either of these teams to do what they would normally do and they have to approach it differently. Do you throw out a rain game in the efficiency ratings?
No,
I know.
No, you hang. Yeah. That's the conditions they played in.
Yeah.
Is it the hair? Is that why you're so nervous about the rain?
I mean, yeah, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be really annoying.
It's going to be a problem for me, too. I'm getting a haircut today.
I'm getting one on Friday.
Okay.
And then it's for no reason, because by Saturday it'll just be a problem. And I don't have the right shoes. It's a whole thing.
It's always the toughest part is always walking back to the car.
Yeah.
Because for me, at least where I park, I can take a shuttle bus up to the stadium, and that's fine. It's the walk back, and you're trying to keep your computer dry, and it's raining, and that's always fun. So, yeah, there is a chance of rain on Saturday here in Fayetteville. One thing I'm noticing, OU's number 3, by the way. Texas is number 4, and then there's a pretty big drop down to South Carolina. It doesn't mean that South Carolina's defense is bad. I actually think South Carolina's got a really good defense. Auburn's playing good defensively. Vanderbilt, Florida. I would even put Ole Miss in this category, and Georgia and Alabama – they're getting better. This feels like a very defensive year for me in the SEC. And you look at some of the games that have been played, like the high-profile games, they've been lower-scoring games. Georgia was 24-21. Texas beat OU the other day 23-8. And in that game, there was a defensive touchdown that was scored by Texas. So their offense only accounted for 16 points in that game. So it feels like, you know, and even like last week, Auburn, Georgia was 20-10. LSU, South Carolina was 20-10. You get out of Arkansas's games because they've been higher scoring for the most part, and you're seeing a lot of low scoring games in this conference right now.
I was going to say, I know last week we talked a little bit about, and you asked some of our guests last week, do we know who the top teams in the SEC are? Do we know who's good, basically, who's actually really good? Do you think that the level of defense that we're seeing is how big a part do you think the level of defense we're seeing is affecting the sort of resemblance to parity that we have in the SEC right now?
Possibly. No, I mean, I think that's a good question.
I'd be interested to compare it to other years.
Well, maybe put it this way. The teams that are winning, like A&M, they're winning big. They're the second best. They're the second most efficient team. LSU, I know they lost to Ole Miss. LSU is playing defense at a higher rate than anybody. So it's weird because I think a lot of people think Alabama's the best team in the SEC right now. their defensive score is really not that good.
I was going to say.
It's not bad, but it's not. It's not maybe what we've been conditioned to expecting from Alabama. And I would say the same thing for Georgia. You know, their defensive score is not great, partially because of that Tennessee game where they went up and down the field on each other.
Right. I feel like as I'm looking at these ratings that you do, it doesn't feel like there's a super complete team here. And I know that's kind of what your power rankings do. Your power ranking
unless
combines,
it's Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Like what if we're just totally sleeping on Vanderbilt?
I mean,
we might be.
We might just still be a victim of, you know, oh, it's Vanderbilt. You know, I do catch myself sometimes feeling like, you know, I catch myself underestimating them a little bit, and I catch myself kind of thinking, I keep waiting for them to regress to what they usually are.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think they're going to do that while Diego Pavia is there. But for some reason in my mind, whenever I look at them and I see things like this, I'm always like waiting for them to mm-hmm. go back to being what they've always been, you know, in our memory. And like, it's interesting if you look ahead to, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about some of these, the matchups that you do using these ratings, but the efficiency ratings predict Vanderbilt to beat LSU. And I don't think that's like a super bold take. I mean, LSU, but they're both ranked and everything, but I think you'll see a fair number of people choose Vanderbilt in this game, but it is a little bit surprising, and it's got them by, what is this, 5 points? I mean, that's not insignificant as far as the efficiency ratings go.
Yeah, it's because LSU is really bad on offense.
Yeah.
Like, they're really bad on offense. They were better against South Carolina the other night, but they only scored 20 points. I think they fumbled twice inside the 5-yard line.
Wow, like, that sounds so familiar.
They're just, it does. They just are having a really hard time putting the ball in the end zone this year. But to your point about Vanderbilt, and we were talking about Indiana yesterday.
Yeah.
I was actually working on something about this earlier today. Like, we are in the process right now of having to totally recondition our minds to what a successful program looks like.
Yeah.
Because even what we thought about college football pre-COVID, like, you can throw all that out the window right now. Yeah, you can think that. I mean, think about the playoff last year. If I would have told you 6 years ago that there was going to be a playoff that included SMU, Arizona State, Indiana, and Boise State, and oh, by the way, it's all going to happen in the same year.
Yeah.
Okay, well, first off, you got to understand that, yes, there's an expanded playoff here, but like, nobody thought those teams were getting in the playoff. I mean, Boise State, they've always kind of been right there on the cusp, but it felt like that was a dream to them that was never going to become a reality under the old system. But Indiana was terrible, and SMU not long ago was terrible, and Arizona State, you know, they've been very up and down, but never up for very long. And so we're just having to totally recondition ourselves. And then you get Indiana. And I do like Indiana, by the way, because you can tell I talk about them a lot. there's a very good chance this year. Like, I would say Indiana right now has as good a chance as Ohio State as being a back-to-back playoff participant. Like, who would have ever thought you would say those words even 2 years ago?
And preseason, I remember listening to, you know, some of the national college football various podcasts and people that I like to read and listen to, and they were kind of talking about, you know, we think Indiana is going to be pretty good, but they're probably not going to be what they were last year, you know. And here they are, they're better. They are actually better than they were last year.
People think their quarterback may be the number one pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah, he's been awesome. It's crazy. I know we talked about this yesterday, but they are just such a fun and interesting story.
Indiana is like that's the goal that everybody, if you're in Arkansas shoes or Oklahoma State shoes or whoever, like, that's what you're reaching for right now. It's like, can that please be us mm-hmm. in 2 years or mm-hmm. in 3 years after you make your coaching change? That, you know, it doesn't matter what you've done for the last 10 or 15 or in Indiana's case 30 years, you can just turn it around overnight. I'm very impressed with that team. But Vanderbilt, they're not quite Indiana because they didn't get to the playoff last year. But I tell you what, if Vanderbilt beats LSU on Saturday, I think you've got to start talking about them as a playoff contender. I don't know that they're going to make the playoff, and honestly, I'd be a little bit surprised if they did. But if they beat LSU, I think that you're at the point in the season where you've got to start considering them as saying, hey, they've got a chance to do this if they can get enough breaks that fall their way down the stretch.
Their schedule is tough. They have several, at least currently ranked teams left. They've got Missouri and Texas and Tennessee, and then plus Auburn and Kentucky. So it is tough, like you said. But, I mean, yeah, we might have to start considering playoff Vanderbilt.
It's It's crazy. By the way, Arkansas defensively, they're last. But the numbers are better after they played Tennessee the other day. Take that for what it's worth. They're still really bad, really bad. But they are better than what they were after the Notre Dame game. SEC power rankings, number one, Vanderbilt right now. Again, I think that's going to change after they play another game or two. A&M's number two, Ole Miss is number three, Georgia's number four, Alabama is number five. Texas is number 10. They're moving up. But this is, I don't know. And you look at the teams that are coming up on Arkansas' schedule. Like you said, you think A&M's going to beat Arkansas. But I think that the next two games, and maybe they can beat A&M. Who knows? The next two games, I think, look at least somewhat winnable for Arkansas against Auburn. Yeah. Auburn can't score.
No.
Mississippi State cannot score as well as you would expect a Jeff Lebby offense to be scoring right now. Their defense is a lot better than last year when they were like they were Arkansas level. This year's Arkansas level bad last year. Mississippi State was, but they're a little bit better this year. I think those two games are winnable for Arkansas. I'm very interested to see how they play against A&M on Saturday. I think we're it's kind of like watching a tennis match. You know, you're kind of like, okay, we think they can. And then they play Notre Dame. No. Tennessee, yeah, I think maybe they can. I'll be surprised if they beat A&M a little bit. Although it is kind of interesting that this is 2 years in a row, October, number four ranked team coming in.
Oh, I hadn't even thought about that.
I think they could beat Mississippi State and Auburn based on
I think so
what
too.
I'm seeing out of these other games.
Yeah, and I don't want to look ahead too far because a lot can change between now and then, but I'm also kind of eyeing LSU slightly. I think a lot would have to go right for Arkansas offensively. They'd really have to not make the kind of crazy mistakes they've made in their last few losses. But I think as far as Arkansas's defense is concerned, LSU's offense is bad. And so I think that's kind of favorable. So, I mean, we'll see if Arkansas can improve some of the offensive mistakes over the next few weeks. Like I said, a lot is probably going to change between now and then. But I'm kind of early sort of looking at that one askance a little bit.
I wanted to mention this. There's by the way, Arkansas and Auburn's going to kick off at 11:45 next week. There's no surprise there. I mean, this was before the season began, they announced that this was going to be an early game. It's just now we have the kickoff time. It's going to be on SEC Network. There was a post that's making its way around social media this week, and it says that it was taken from a TxAgs message board, and this is the percentage of home night games over the last five seasons in the SEC. As you might expect, LSU was number one. 83% of its home games have been at night. I don't know if this is conference games only or if this is all games. You know, obviously, LSU, they got their whole night thing there, whatever. Arkansas's last at 23%. Kind of interesting. Georgia's next to last at 28%.
Which is surprising. They play in the afternoon a lot, though.
I have made it be known how I feel about night games. I don't care. They don't do anything for me. And I understand people love them. That's great. We can all have our different opinions. I don't care for night games. Arkansas is going to get one night game this year against Missouri. We already know that Mississippi State's going to be that's going to be a cold night game, too.
Yeah.
Imagine that. It's not even Black Friday anymore. It's a day later in the year. It's
well, as long as it's not snowball like Saturday? Last year. Yeah, something like that. Every day is freaking Cyber Day now.
No, but this is the original Cyber Saturday. Or is it? No,
it's
Small
Cyber
Business
Monday.
Saturday.
It's Cyber Monday.
Small Business Saturday.
Yeah.
Cyber Monday.
Yeah.
So you can go into the small businesses out here around the square, get you a nice little scarf or something, wear it to the Missouri game that night. I don't know. This is just, to me, it's just kind of interesting.
It is. The Georgia thing surprised me a lot at only 28%. But like I said, I do feel like, I mean, anecdotally, I feel like they play in the afternoon a lot. That kind of like second primetime sort of deal.
People don't want to look at this, maybe like I do, which is that an 11 a.m. game on ABC is actually a better vehicle for promoting your program than, say, a 6:45 game on SEC Network or a 6:30 game on ESPNU, because there's going to be a lot more eyes that are on your team if you're playing at 11 o'clock in the morning than there are at, you know, again, in the SEC Network night game or some of these more obscure networks. Now, if you can land a night game like they did with Tennessee last year on ABC and you can get, you know, 7 million people watching your game, that's great. But people don't look at it that way. They just look at it as, hey, I got to get up to Fayetteville, and how long do I have to get my tailgate set up?
Yeah.
And I don't care if they're playing on SEC Network or ABC or TNT or the Cartoon Network. I just want to get my tailgate set up, and I want to sit out there all day and whatever. But 23% over 5 years, Arkansas has played night home games.
And so they're not that far back from Georgia at 28. And then what's the – okay, 31, Tennessee at 31. I was going to say –
again,
it feels
that's
like
a little bit of a surprise.
It is. I was going to say it feels like a little bit of a wide margin.
But those are also programs that have been pretty good during that time.
That's true.
And they're probably getting picked up for more prime television slots.
Yeah.
Again, the 11 o'clock ABC thing has become a big deal because of what Fox has done with its Big Ten coverage. Mm-hmm. And Big 12 back before Texas and OU left, but they put their prime game at 11 o'clock in the morning. And so now if you're ABC, which is kind of ESPN, just because of the way cable works, not as many people are watching ESPN as they can ABC because you can get it over the air. And so if you're ABC, that's really the big competitor with Fox. And so that 11 a.m. game on ABC is very strategic in trying to get eyeballs away from Ohio State and, you know, Penn State or Iowa and, you know, whoever that's in that Big Ten game.
I have learned so much about TV since I started working with you because I just never –
I appreciate that.
I am so, like, not versed in the TV scape at all in terms – you know, I understand the way that it affects athletic departments. I understand kind of – the business side as it relates to schools, the business side as it relates to like network versus network is a little beyond me. And then I also, Corey makes fun of me all the time because there are very few like commentators that I can recognize by voice or honestly, even by sight. There's very few that I know by name, even if I hear them or see them all the time. It's just not, it's just never been something that I pay that much attention to. And I know, you know, so
know
much
you.
About the crews, all the things like Matt is very up on TV stuff.
I have to keep myself entertained. But yeah.
Who's your favorite like NFL broadcaster? Since I know you're an NFL guy and I'm not really an NFL person. If you had to watch one crew call every
here.
Cowboys game, who would you want it to be?
I like the Sunday night crew. Tarico and Collinsworth.
Okay. I know them, I think.
I would say, and maybe I'm influenced by what they do from a production standpoint on NBC, but I just think the overall production value of a Sunday night football game is better than anything else out there.
What about
on
college?
TV. College, are we talking about the best crew to call a game?
Yeah, like if you had to watch one crew call, and I know you're usually at Arkansas games, but like if you had to watch one crew.
The best production value is CBS.
And yeah,
the SEC
really good.
Lost that whenever they went exclusive with the Mouse a couple of years ago. But, you know, I mean, you think what you want to about Nestler and Danielson. And like, all you need to know about how good CBS is as a production value, go pull up on YouTube the Kick Six, the Auburn-Alabama game from 2013, and just watch their producer and director go to work for like 10 minutes after the game. It is a masterclass in sports storytelling of a live broadcast. It's incredible. The number of TVs that and you can talk to the people over at Arkansas, and they'll tell you this too. When CBS would come to town, like the number of just camera operator passes that they needed was so much higher than any other broadcast. They would totally flood the field with cameras, whether it be, I mean, you know, everybody's got the sky cam and everybody's got the crane cam and everybody's got the guy riding around on that little thing that goes up and down the sideline. But they would have so many more what they call gopher cams going around, you know, people that's right up there underneath the Chi Omega girls who are cheering and, you know, I mean, like whoever. And that's what makes the CBS broadcast so good is that they've got so many veterans in the truck. And they do such a good job with their cameras. And honestly, the Big Ten was, you know, I mean, they to me, the Big Ten kind of won that whole SEC-CBS divorce. ABC's done better, but it's not a CBS broadcast.
Yeah, I remember when that, you know, the SEC on CBS finally ended and everybody was kind of sharing their favorite SEC on CBS moments.
Oh, I've got many.
Yeah. Oh, I believe that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they did a great job. So, got me going down.
I know.
The rabbit hole.
I knew I would. Yeah. I knew that would derail you a little bit.
let's see here. Arkansas basketball picked to finish fifth in the SEC. The SEC tip-off. What do they call this? The SEC media?
SEC basketball tip-off. I think.
Okay. It's happening in Birmingham right now. In fact, we've got Ethan Westerman and Anthony Christensen down in Birmingham right now covering this. You can read their coverage throughout the afternoon at WholeHogSports.com. But yesterday, the preseason media poll came out. Arkansas picked to finish fifth in men's basketball, 16th in women's basketball, a.k.a. last. Not a really big surprise. No. I mean, Kelsey Music has taken over a massive rebuilding job for the women. I told you whenever Auburn, they had their coaching change a few weeks back when Bruce Pearl abruptly resigned, that I was interested to see if that might change the top a little bit, because I thought Auburn would probably be one of the top two or three teams, and it was interesting that they were sixth right behind Arkansas.
Yeah, I am not sure what to expect from Auburn now. I don't know a whole lot about Bruce Pearl's son. I don't know, you know, I think we talked about this when it happened, just that whole move of just kind of leaving so close to the season and then just installing your kid mm-hmm. is like just so crazy to me. So that continues to irk me a little bit. But yeah, like you said, it was kind of an unknown how it was going to affect the expectations for them preseason. And I will be very curious whenever you have something that is to that level of unknown. Once you get into the season, you have to throw preseason out a little bit because of how little you knew, you know what I'm saying? So, like, mm-hmm. you almost can't hold Auburn. You can't look and say, oh, look how much they overperformed. And you also can't necessarily say, oh, look how much they underperformed to a certain point mm-hmm. Because of how unknown they are because of the circumstances. But, yeah, I mean, I think I saw a little bit of discussion over whether people thought Arkansas should be higher, both in the SEC and nationally. They're at 14 in the AP preseason mm-hmm. AP poll. Mm-hmm. So there was a little bit of discussion about, you know, where they should fall and if they should be higher. But I think, you know, having Florida picked to finish first in the SEC makes total sense. I talked to Jimmy Dykes for our basketball preview issue about just kind of his thoughts on the SEC and the national landscape, and he was kind of thinking Florida would have a really good shot to repeat. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a surprise. And then, yeah, Kentucky at 2, Tennessee at 3. It's all kind of the usual suspects, Alabama at 4. So this makes a lot of sense to me.
The All-SEC team, also the first team, Alex Condon at Florida, Josh Hubbard at Mississippi State, Otega Owe at Kentucky. He's the preseason player of the year. Tahad Pettiford at Auburn and LeBar and Filon at Alabama. That's the first team. Boogie Fland at Florida. He's on the second team. And then Arkansas's got a couple of third-teamers on the preseason All-SEC team, Carter Knox and DJ Wagner. Ahead of Arkansas in order, Florida's number one, Kentucky number two, Tennessee number three, and Alabama number four. And I did want to touch on, you mentioned the AP poll. Arkansas's number 14 in the AP poll. Look at all the teams that are in the AP poll that Arkansas is going to play this season. And ask yourself, has there ever been, at least going into a season, a year where you say, wow, that is a hard, hard basketball schedule? I mean, you look at this, Purdue's preseason number one, but then after that, Houston. Arkansas plays them in New York. That's their number two. New Jersey, I'm sorry. Florida's number three. Duke, Arkansas plays them in Chicago. They're number six going down the line. Kentucky, number nine. They'll come to Bud Walton Arena this year. Razorbacks are going to play Texas Tech in Dallas. They're number 10. Louisville's coming in here for the ACC Network or the ACC-SEC Challenge. They are number 11. Alabama, Razorbacks will play them in conference play. They're number 15. Tennessee's number 18. Auburn's number 20. Michigan State, Razorbacks go up there early in the season. They're number 22. This is incredible. This is what you want your basketball schedule to look like. This is what people get excited about. And this goes back to something I wrote in our basketball preview, and I talked to Dwight Stewart about this when he was in here a couple of weeks ago. I can't remember a year when you go into a basketball season since the mid-90s when people are talking about basketball as much as they are already right now. I mean, it's football. It's a lost season probably. And so everybody's turned their attention to basketball, And oh, by the way, you got a really good coach, you got really good players, and you got a really good schedule. That's the trifecta.
Yeah, I feel like the joke all the time is, you know, oh, wait till basketball season, or when does basketball season start? You know, when you get to this point when football is disappointing. And now it's, there's always that, but it does feel different this year, especially with what they were able to achieve last year after starting the way that they did. I think it's been very interesting to see how quickly the vibes have improved since Calipari got here. Because last year, obviously, you had excitement just because, what was it going to be? You know, you had national excitement just because, oh, the novelty of John Calipari at somewhere other than Kentucky. And then now you actually, in this second year, you get the chance to be excited about what he's actually going to do at Arkansas. Some of that narrative is gone now because we've seen it. It's not new anymore. And so they get to build a little bit now.
I'm excited about basketball. We are, what's today? October 14th, 10 days away.
That's
from the Arkansas-Cincinnati game over at Bud Walton.
That's crazy.
The night before the early kickoff against Auburn.
Excellent. Yeah. How late? What time does it start again? I don't remember.
And it's 7 or 8? 7 or 8 o'clock? That'll be a quick turnaround for the people that go. I mean, you can
Which won't be me.
You can just go sleep at your tailgate.
Yeah.
Go to the basketball game. Yeah. Get your car set up.
It's not a bad idea, actually.
Have breakfast at your tailgate.
Be kind of fun.
Yeah. I think so. And then they go, what do they play? Memphis on the 27th. Yeah. So basketball season always sneaks up on me.
Yeah, me too.
But it's like, you know, you look at SEC tip-off this week, it's like, wait a minute, they're doing that a long time before the whole season starts in, 3 weeks?
Yeah.
We're getting close.
The only thing I wish is that some of these big non-conference games were in Fayetteville. Almost, I don't think any of them are.
Well, Louisville is.
Louisville's the only one.
Michigan State is there, away, and then everything else is.
Multiple neutral sites, yeah. So that's kind of a bummer.
But that's a Calipari schedule.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a Calipari schedule for you. Yeah. And again, you go back to revenue, that makes a lot of money for the basketball program. I mean, those are big paydays that they get. Probably, I don't know the exact number, but I would guess that, you know, playing Duke in Chicago on Thanksgiving, that's seven figures.
Yeah.
They're going to bring back home for that. So, you know, probably the same thing for playing in New Jersey and Dallas.
And we saw the viewership they got last year in some of these big neutral sites, the Thanksgiving game, all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
Calipari thinks that they will get, and I wonder if maybe he's overselling this a little bit, because last year last year they benefited from the Bears and the Lions, and they had that crazy finish.
Oh, yeah.
And then that was on CBS, and then it rolled into Arkansas, Illinois. They benefited from, you know, people who were probably back in the kitchen eating some more turkey and they never turned their TV station. This is a little bit different this year. I don't think it's that turnover that they had last year where they're going NFL straight into college basketball. But these Thanksgiving games, they have had big ratings. And at least, you know, as Calipari says, he thinks it could be the biggest TV rating in 20, 25 years for a regular season game. And I don't doubt it, because the TV ratings, honestly, are not that high for a lot of these games, the Thanksgiving games, because everybody's got their TV on and there's not a whole lot going on, you know, elsewhere. They do seem to draw a little bit better.
Makes sense to me.
All right, Christina, appreciate you being here. She's going to be back again tomorrow. We got 3 days in a row with Christina. also tomorrow, we're going to have Olin Buchanan from TexAgs. He's going to be on the show to talk to us about the Aggies and preview this weekend's game. Hope that we see you there or at our website, wholehogsports.com. Have a great day, everybody.